And I'm going to call the meeting to order. Thank you very much. Meeting will come to order. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much, and welcome to our regular board meeting on November 19th. We do have a full house, a quorum, and so we will begin. Because we have a rather time-sensitive item, rather than keep that until the end as it was originally placed, I have been requested to move item 9B to this particular place in our meeting today, and then we'll follow that with special reports, and then we'll be moving into presentations. We have some special presentations today, too. But first, we're going to go ahead and start on item 9B.
Thank you, Madam
President. Item 9B will be the consideration of the adoption of Ordinance 01-2015, an ordinance adopting the Cambria Community Services District Groundwater Management Plan, and directing that a notice of exemption be filed. And introduction will be probably a combination of General Manager Gruber and Legal Counsel Carmel. Who would like to start?
Madam President, I'll defer to District Counsel Tim Carmel. Just a informational note, we don't have any additional PowerPoint presentations at this time. Once an introduction is made, then we would just ask that the board would consider adopting the ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam President. You have before you the ordinance adopting your groundwater management plan. This has been a very busy process. I think this is the fifth time you've heard this matter in the last 3 months. It was initiated on September 15th. You adopted a resolution of intention on October 15th. You've had two workshops. Last Thursday, you introduced the ordinance and considered all protests. There weren't any protests. So here we're here to consider actually adopting the ordinance, which, as you know, is a condition of our Prop 84 grant. So it's important that we get this done. I won't belabor the point. We're asking you to open the public. It's not a public hearing, but take public comment, and after that, consider adopting the ordinance. And have nothing else to add. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. We have no request for public comment on 9B, which we are on at this time, so we'll move on from public comment since none was requested. And then we are ready for board discussion. Okay. Any comments?
I'd be willing to make a motion.
Yes, sir. Would you please make a motion, please, Director Behringer?
I move that we adopt Ordinance 012015, an ordinance adopting the Cambria Community Services District Groundwater Management Plan, and directing that a notice of exemption be filed.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. And point of order?
Yes, if I could just ask you to add to that motion. By title only, you're adopting by title only and waiving further reading.
And read by title only and awaiting peer review.
Yes, I agree with that.
All right, very good. It's been moved and seconded that we adopt by title only and waive further reading. Any further discussion on the motion? Okay, may we have then please a roll call?
Director Behringer?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. And thank you. Motion passes 5-0. And now, you'll probably enjoy this. We're going to take a quick 5-minute break because it is a time sensitive document and it does need signing. And so we'll be right back in about 5 minutes. is the special report by Commander Taylor, and I here he is. And then we will follow that with the fire department report with Battalion Chief Shalhoub. Green light.
Can you hear me now? All right.
Can hear you.
I didn't make the meeting last month. My apologies. I had a sergeant who was supposed to do it, and about an hour before the meeting was scheduled, they had something happen in the South County that he had to go to. So he didn't make the meeting. I was in Sacramento for meetings at the Office of Emergency Services. There was a lot of talk about the fires in Northern California. That was an interesting subject, but the majority of the meeting talked about flood control and what they're expecting for El Ninos. As for the reporting period in the last 30 days from the 21st till November today, the 19th, we had 258 calls for service in Cambria, 39 traffic stops, 10 pedestrian contacts, 14 foot patrols in the local areas checking on the illegal camps. We had 9 alarm calls. 2 of those were for businesses, 7 were residential. There were no losses or property damage in any of those. We had 14 incomplete 911 calls that required deputies respond to check on them. There were 10 disturbing the peace calls that ranged from loud music to an incident of domestic violence. We did not have any reported vandalisms. We arrested 4 drunks. We had 1 arrest for spousal abuse. We had 3 theft reports. They ranged from a purse stolen from an unlocked car in the 500 block of Hastings, a bicycle stolen in front of a business in the 2500 block of Main, and a generator stolen from in front of the 800 block of Main Street. We had 3 burglaries. The first consisted of some jewelry stolen from a residence in the 5000 block of Pine Knolls. Second involved items stolen from a storage unit on Village Lane. The third was a burglary of a restaurant in the 1300 block of Tamson Street. In that particular case, the deputy was able to capture images of the suspect from the restaurant surveillance system, which had been operating even though the restaurant had been closed for business. Later that same day, the deputy was on patrol, and he was passing the Coast Unified School District offices on Main Street, and he looked over and saw the suspect, who was accompanied by a female. Subsequent investigation discovered that the female was in possession of a taser and a medium quantity of methamphetamine. The deputy arrested Humberto Aguilar Lopez, 32 years of age, a resident of Paso Robles, for burglarizing the restaurant, and he arrested his companion, Veronica Romero, 28 years of age, also of Paso Robles, for possession of methamphetamine and weapons on a school ground. The only other thing to mention that has come up is we've been receiving reports of the IRS scams. They're back at it again. They've changed it up a little bit. Now they're using robocallers to make it sound a little more official, like there's something legitimate behind it. They're telling the victims that they owe money, that they need to contact a phone number. Once they make contact, they're then directed to put money onto a prepaid Visa or some type of a green dot prepaid card and then call back with that number. No one so far has fallen victim to this. They have hung up on this person once they've made contact. They've notified us. We follow up on these calls, and what we find is that the telephone numbers are spoofed, which essentially means that somebody in a foreign country is able to cover his tracks by using a number with something like a 415 or a 213 area code, so it looks like it's in California, but it's not. They're overseas, and there's really not much we can do about it except make the public aware. The only other thing that I wanted to talk about briefly was that the Christmas bicycle program is underway at the Sheriff's Office. Our elves at the Honor Farm have been working diligently throughout the year to get all of the donated bicycles refurbished and up to speed and ready to give out to children. The applications, I left some on the table outside. If anybody knows of a child that is in need of a bicycle, you can fill the application out on their behalf. You can fax it to us. You can mail it to us. You can also go online at slowsheriff.org. The form is also present there. It can be filled out and simply emailed to the Honor Farm. The bicycle giveaway will begin at 12 noon on December 16th at the Honor Farm, which is located on Oklahoma Avenue at Kansas Avenue, which is just off Highway 1 there at the main sheriff's office. And that's the report.
Thank you very much, Commander. Do we have questions, comments on the board? Okay, well, we're glad to see you back.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And then next under presentations, under special reports, we'll hear from Battalion Chief Shalhoub. And I think just for clarity, too, after you complete that, then you're going to go ahead and, rather than have Mr. Flores give his report, where is he? I've seen him in the audience. He will follow after you go ahead with items on the agenda B and C under this. And so you'll start with your fire department report and then segue into some very special acknowledgments and honoring of some people from the fire department.
Okay, thank you, President Romanet and members of the board. Eric Shalhoub, Battalion Chief for CAL FIRE, assigned to Cambria Fire District. We'll start with some operational stuff. On October 25th, a small vegetation fire occurred on near the grammar school and was quickly controlled by our engine crews locally here. On November 2nd, a large cypress tree fell when the rains came on the 1800th block of Main Street. It unfortunately destroyed four cars and caused minor damage to the building, but there were no injuries to the civilians or firefighters. With other news, we've been working with the district and the county staff to coordinate a meeting to identify past flood areas. So far, we've had to cancel a couple of meetings at the last minute just due to busy schedules, but we'll continue to work together to make sure that those meetings occur. I've been working with the fire department staff on identifying problem areas and pre-planning those problem areas with our maps through GIS and through FEMA. So we're getting ready for the floods if they do, in fact, occur. We've also identified three areas that the public can utilize sand for sandbags. We're asking the public that they purchase their own sandbags down at your local hardware store. But those three areas we publicized, it's basically the Dog Park, Shamel Park, and Lambton Park. We do have sand also at the fire station, but that will be utilized for emergency personnel as well for the district's needs and the fire department's needs. CERT is also coordinating a sandbag filling day with some Boy Scouts. It'll probably be in early December. I don't have a date on that quite yet. We're also reviewing our swift water rescue plans and are gearing up for training on that. And also we're going to hopefully have an in-core drill with the boats regarding swift water and flood rescues in early December. As far as prevention goes, much work's been completed by the cemetery and on Bridge Street on the Covell Ranch. A private company came with a large remote chipper and excavator and accomplished a significant amount of chipping and work there. I encourage you, if you haven't seen it up there, it's pretty impressive on the amount of work they did in a short period of time. All grant-funded, of course. And then the engine crews have been busy visiting schools, spreading the fire prevention message with Sparky, the dog. And then crews remain busy fielding questions regarding the FHFRP invoicing, so with their weed abatement program. So with that, if you have any questions as far as my report goes, we can move on to the pinning.
Any questions from the board? Okay, then I think we're ready to move on to the exciting part.
So we're going to kind of switch it up here as far as the schedule goes, and we're going to swear in engineer Tyson Hamilton. He's promoted engineer, and then we'll be pinning the badges on engineer Tyson Hamilton and Emily Torlano that's just made captain. So Chief Reeder and I will go ahead and conduct this, and we're going to try and do it so that the camera can get this all in and put the family to our right here. So if Tyson wants to come up, and he can be sworn in.
All
Tyson Hamilton, do solemnly swear.
I, Tyson Hamilton, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
To support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies.
Against, sorry.
And the State of California.
And the State of California against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith.
And allegiance.
And allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And that I take this obligation.
I take this obligation.
Freely.
Freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will and faithfully discharge.
That I will and faithfully discharge.
The duties upon.
The duties upon.
Which I am about to enter.
Which I am about to enter.
So I'm going to go ahead and bring up Chief Reeder and Emily, Captain Torlamo, and we're going to speak about the shield or the badge and the collar brass that we wear and what they symbolize. And as we start this, I'll go ahead and call the family members up that will be pinning the badges and the collar brass. So we'll go ahead and I'm going to turn it over to Chief Reeder, and he's going to start with the presentation.
Thank you, Chief Shellhoop. So if the family members would come on up, and Chief Shellhoop's going to hand you their badges, and we'll proceed.
After a slow one, we should maybe let everybody clear out that's going to leave, you know, after they're done here.
Oh, okay, before Dean comes up.
So as the family members are pinning badges on their family members, firefighter family members, I want to read this about the badge. Fire service is steeped in tradition. A firefighter wears a badge that goes back to the days of the Crusades. And while the Crusades could be considered a dark event in human history, go ahead and proceed with that while I'm reading. I'm going to be talking while you're doing. And while the Crusades could be considered a dark event in human history, it was from the knights of this time that the tradition of the badge offering protection from fire began. It is a shield of protection. That protection does not come from the badge itself, but from the experience passed down through time from one firefighter to another who has worn a badge.
Collar brass is right
there. Okay. Collar brass.
So I'm going to do collar brass. I'll be speaking about collar brass. Collar brass can be worn in the fire service to signify rank. Today, Engineer Tyson Hamilton is receiving collar brass with a fire engine that signifies that he's in charge of getting the crew to all incidents safely and that all equipment carried on the fire engine is ready in ready condition. Today, Captain Emily Torlano is receiving double bugles, signifying she is responsible for the fire station and leading the crew. And in the early days of American fire departments, orders were given to firefighters through the use of large brass devices that resembled megaphones. These were very ornate brass horns that were commonly called bugles or speaking trumpets. The person with the bugle hanging from the neck or shoulder was easily identified and was identified as the person in charge. You were wearing the same type of collar brass that many of us wore years ago and that many of us before us have worn. It is a symbol that you are not alone and that we all, with our cumulative experiences of officers now in the past, have bestowed upon you. We trust you, we believe in you, and we support you. And then Reeder's got some closing statements here.
Thank you, family members. Your job is done. I'd like to ask you to be seated. Appreciate it. If you two could just stand there. In closing, it has been, it is, and it always will be that our battle to protect life, property, and our natural resources is dependent on strong, dedicated, and well-trained and well-equipped firefighters. Captain Torlano, Engineer Hamilton, understand this, and their success today demonstrates their commitment to meeting the mission of the fire service. Chief Shalhoub and I congratulate you and wish you the very best in your endeavors in the fire service. I would just like to turn it over to the board if they have any comments. And
I do. Thank you very, very, very much. First of all, I want to congratulate both and Captain Turlano and Engineer Hamilton. Come back this way again. Come on back. Come on back. This is a very proud moment for you, for your family, and for Cambria. And it is wonderful to see you in these new roles. And I know that we're going to appreciate your professionalism, the protection we receive every day from you and the whole department, and we appreciate that. You do have very special people here today and family members, and so I would like for you to introduce the family members you have and maybe just have them stand and stay standing, and we'd like to welcome them here with us today, too. So shall we start with Engineer Hamilton?
Sure. So I'd like to introduce my father, Gary Hamilton, my mom, Christine Hamilton, my sister, Ashley Hamilton, Cole, my nephew, Reuben, and my wife, Ambria.
Welcome.
And with me today, I have my mom, Marianne, my big brother, Kelly, his wife Ansley, my dad Len, and then my little guy she's like a sister to me, that's Angela there, and Little River, one of my sons.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to thank everybody, the community, the board, and this organization for giving me this opportunity. It's a heartfelt experience. I'm up for the challenge. I've already learned so much. I'm grateful to be able to work under Chief Shahoob. He's a great mentor to follow, and I just wanted to thank everybody and the community as well for all their support. So,
thank you. The pride and the pleasure to share in this today with both of you is all ours. Thank you very much. Okay, now, I'm not sure you're all welcome to stay for the meeting, but if you need just a little moment, if some are, if you're wanting to stay, have a seat, or if it's a good time to go wherever you're going, that's fine, either way. But we're going to move now into the regular meeting, and is Dean Flores in the audience? There he is. Okay, I couldn't see you. Okay, we'll give them a minute then, and then I'm going to invite you up for your report. Okay, thank you all so much, and now we'll get continuing into our regular meeting, and under presentations then, and each month with us, we have Dean Flores, who is here to give us an update on activities, and so good to see you again.
Good to see you.
There was no plane that got sent back to Los Angeles. There was no car.
And there will not be in the future.
Okay. Well, so, welcome.
Thank you. I will be brief. Madam President and members, I do want to say that I did a PowerPoint last meeting, and I think what I will do is do a complete PowerPoint every quarter. This is an update to give you a little bit about what has been going on. Obviously, you just moved the groundwater management process. Thank you for that. As you know, Sacramento is anxiously waiting for this reimbursement action, and so I think following all the processes has been great, and I want to congratulate you and the board and the legal team and others to get that off and moving. I also wanted to let you know about DWR. DWR is having a lot of discussions about indirect potable use. We need to be part of those discussions. We have been part of those discussions. And I think overall, as we start to look at the wastewater treatment supply issue, it is completely important that we are enmeshed in that. We have been doing that over the last 30 days, as well as talking about the nitrate issue, because DWR now is focusing even more so on the nitrate issues because of the dollars that are remaining in the bond funds to actually move that forward. So I do want to let you know we are part and parcel of those discussions. In terms of grant funding, obviously water recycling is an issue. Purple pipe issues are super important to the state, and as you begin to have these conversations here at this level, I would simply tell you that it is important to make sure our projects are up and center on that as we begin to figure out how that transpires. I also will tell you that I know that Bob Gressens is going to be part of a Prop 84 residual discussion, meaning what's left of Prop 84 dollars. There's not much, but there's probably enough to get some studies done for the district, and I know Bob is working on that, and I think it's a good place to be for the district. The state is trying to close that account at some point in time, so I'd probably say before the end of the year, those funds should be extinguished, and hopefully Cambria will be part of the mix in that. In terms of the regulatory government side of things, I do... And I think I should tell you, I think I mentioned last meeting, California Fish and Wildlife Committee regulations will be out in final form probably before the end of the year. Some changes in that the district should be aware of. I will actually send those, if I could, to Tim and making sure that there's some sense of how it fits or it doesn't. But I do know they're going to be making some substantial changes. The discussions with state parks is going very well, as you know. And I think it's an issue now of trying to figure out the monitoring aspects of this and how the state can participate with the district. There'll be some staff changes, as you know, at the state parks locally. We have a new director coming in who is quite good, ready to go on the issues. So I don't think we're going to lose anything there. But I would say that trying to set a meeting up with the new director, start that conversation early. And make sure that that is a continuum so we don't lose any time or space, particularly when it comes to biological monitoring aspects of this. So I want you to know we're continuing to try to put that meeting together. In terms of legislative issues that will affect the district, the deadline for amendments to second-year bills is December 10th. I plan to have at the next board meeting a written report for you on pending legislation that may affect the district moving into the second session. Second session starts the first week of January, but pretty much all the bills that will be in place will be set somewhere between December 10th and Christmas vacation. So I'll make sure next meeting you'll have in hand a report. It'll look kind of lengthy, but we'll kind of highlight some of the bills that will have some impact on the district. The last thing I do want to mention, just in terms of meetings, is the Coastal Commission obviously met last meeting. There was discussion of the emergency water system in public session. I have talked to a few commissioners regarding that presentation. And I would say the big themes in terms of that presentation for the board to consider, first and foremost, is that I think the commission is really looking for a kind of a longer range vision for the district. It's looking not just at the emergency water system, but in totality, how does it fit with the wastewater component, and more importantly, what benefits to the environment is kind of the message that I think the commission is looking for. I think we're doing that already as we move through the EIR, which is a positive. But I think the key theme, as you have said, Madam President, moving forward, is this word sustainable. Sustainable is kind of the most important aspect of what the Coastal Commission, I think, is looking for. Things that this project already does, obviously, in terms of making sure that we have some minimal impacts and, more importantly, positive impacts on the other side on top of water supply. So I would probably say that those are things that I do know that your GM and Bob Gressens and the folks putting the EIR together are all kind of now in sync. But I do think the longer-term look at sustainability is going to be very critical. And I think that's really all I have for this report.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have comments, questions from the board? Okay, well, thank you. We'll look forward to next time. Okay, so then we are now into public comment, and we do have some requests for public comment. And so we will start with... agenda review first. That's just to sort of alert the people that are just coming up here for public comment. It's almost time. So, on agenda review, do we have any items that any director would like to have pulled?
No.
Okay, seeing none, we'll move on now and to calling up our first on public comment is Bob Putney.
Good afternoon, members of the board and staff. Bob Putney, resident of Cambria. I just want to bring to your attention, since you have a contract with Cal Fire for a for your acting fire chief, that when he was sent to Northern California to the Lake Fire, since you pay his full salary, wages, benefits, his full benefit, he went up on a Master Mutual Aid fire in the state of California, which is entitled for reimbursement. So I hope you'll seek reimbursement, since we're in tough economic times, that you get the money back for the time he was out of the community and served very well up there, did a great job, and in a horrendous fire in horrendous conditions. So I just want to make sure that you're aware of that, and then you work with Cal Fire to get the reimbursement that's back due to the community, to the CSD. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next we have Crosby Schwartz. Yes. Well.
Okay. There. I think we're
there.
On.
Very good.
I have a comment about the proposed water and sewer rate increases and the Proposition 218 requirements. During the discussion of these rate increases, there wasn't too much talk about whether the funds from this current proposed rate increase would be used for the operation and maintenance of the emergency water supply. As you know, Prop 218 has requirements about spending revenues and fees on the purpose for which they are collected. And I would recommend that that you get perhaps a written legal opinion that you can co-mingle the revenues from the proposed water and sewer rate increase with the revenues that were previously approved for the emergency water supply. It's a potential problem if you don't have your accounting set up in such a way that you can show how these funds are or are not co-mingled. Thank you.
Thank you. Is this the last one? Okay, and then we have our own Director Rice, who has requested public comment, and you are welcome to just stay where you are with your public comment. You don't have to go over
Thank
to the
you.
Other mic, unless you want to.
Every year we hear from Richard Margetson about the needs and wishes benefit that happens in Los Osos to benefit the homeless and transitional food and shelter, and he couldn't make it today, and so he asked me to make the presentation. The details are up on the slide, and I'm just going to read the letter that kind of explains what this event is. It's sponsored by the South Bay Seniors, People Helping People. And on Saturday, December 12th, the community of Los Osos will host its community-wide, or county-wide, 10th annual Needs and Wishes Holiday Fundraiser after the Chamber of Commerce Parade from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the South Bay Community Center. As everything associated with the event is donated or sponsored, 100% of the total proceeds will go directly to this year's chosen recipients as follows. 40% will go to the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, 40% will go to the Slow Nor Clinic, and 20% to Transitional Food and Shelter. To that end, we are in need of items for the toy and gift store, silent auction, raffle, and gift certificate sale. If you would like to assist in helping those less fortunate among us, please contact, the phone number is 528-5800. If you have any other questions or want to make a monetary donation, that's also where you can contact. The Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, for folks who don't know, is in partnership with Interfaith Coalition for the Homeless. They house up to 85 men, women, and children nightly.
Daily, the shelter provides breakfast and dinner for approximately 100 to 125 people. Transitional Food and Shelter bridges the gaps in assistance for the disabled homeless in SLO County by providing short-term housing in local motels and apartments for people who have been released by local hospitals and require a safe, accessible place to recover by doctor's orders. The SLO NOR Clinic is a volunteer-based nonprofit organization dedicated to providing high-quality, free health care to uninsured people living in our community because no one should go without health care. Thank you in advance. The event is on December 12th in Los Osos at their community center, and the number 528-5800 is the number to call if you have any questions. I encourage folks to go. Also, the Interact Club with Rotary will be out here the next couple of weeks at Farmers Market with their big jar to collect money, so you can also donate money with the Interact Club at Farmers Market for about 4 weeks. Saturday, December 12th, be there. It's open from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. There's a silent auction, and you can buy toys for kids, and all the proceeds go to the three charities. All the proceeds go to the three charities that I listed. Thank you to Richard Margetson for helping put this on every year, along with the South Bay Seniors People Helping People organization.
Thank you, Director Rice, for the public comment. Okay, moving now then into our next item, finish with public comment on item 5. We'll move into item 6, the General Manager's Report. And we have no request for public comment, and so we'll proceed. And so, General Manager Gruber.
Thank you, Madam President, board members. I will talk with Eric regarding what Bob Putney brought up about the reimbursement. The Advanced Sustainable Water Treatment Plant, as we all know, is operational. And I left my email address here and Bob Gresham's email address. We really promote tours of the facility, especially when it's operational. So if you want to shoot us an email, if there's any civic groups that are interested in seeing it, any of the school groups that could use it as a science-based type of learning experience, if there's any individuals that would like to tour the facility, it's your facility, just shoot us an email. We'd be more than happy to coordinate that tour for you. We did modify the office hours. They're closed from we're open from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. We haven't received any complaints from any of our customers. This was triggered by staff reductions, of course, and now it allows staff to really focus on some daily operational duties, and we're getting a lot more done. I was asked a question: are we open a little bit more during the billing period time? And the answer to that is no. And this is flexible. I mean, if we find that it's not working, then we'll be more than happy to reevaluate that and go back to where we were originally. But right now, it's working out rather well. When Dean talked about an advanced sustainable water treatment plant in our facility, the next bullet point is really where we partially get our source of water from regarding that, and that's our wastewater treatment plant. I've talked about this in the past, but for a long time we were putting rather high nitrates out of the back of our plant, and for several months now we've made some operational adjustments, and we're putting very low nitrates out of the back of the plant. The results on November 10th were about, I think they're about 2.45 milligrams per liter or parts per million, compared to being as high as 30 and 40. The result of that is the nitrate levels we're putting out to the perk ponds are percolating down into the ground. They're lower. Part of that water is being withdrawn from the 9P7 well. It's being put into the Advanced Sustainable Water Treatment Plant. And the result of that is the nitrates leaving that facility are very low. Our last test results indicated that the nitrates leaving the Advanced Sustainable Water Treatment Plant were ND, which means non-detect. So it's one big system. It all has to work together. So that's why it's important that we continue to make improvements to our wastewater treatment plant, make upgrades to that facility, work closely with Regional Water Quality Control Board. Bob Greshens did attend a RAC, kind of a work group today down in Morro Bay. As Dean indicated, there are some monies left in Proposition 84, and Bob had some preliminary conversations with me, and so at least he went down to the group today and said, we would like to start a dialogue, and really it's up to the board, with requesting $2 million more for the wastewater treatment plant, upgrades to that wastewater treatment plant. We'll bring back some more information next board meeting, and if the board would like to direct staff to say, you know, Jerry, Bob, you need to go back and really request this amount of money and for this project. But it was kind of a last hour thing, so we went ahead and just put that on the table today and started the dialogue with those folks down there. As President Robinette indicated, we do meet weekly with county staff, ourselves, and our consultants. And President Robinette on the EIR. We're making progress on the EIR, and we anticipate having a draft, hopefully, for review in sometime in late January. You adopted the groundwater management plan today. We're one step closer to getting our $4.3 million. Again, thanks to hard work by Bob Greshens. He is not at this meeting because he took that signed document, scanned it, faxed it over to the county. The county has all the necessary paperwork already completed. They're waiting for this, and then they'll forward it up to DWR. We anticipate it taking between 45 and 60 days. However, I said I'd be more than willing to drive up to Sacramento and pick up the $4.3 million check, and so we're hoping that we'll get a little quicker than that. The reason I mentioned that I meet with President Robinette is this. I just want to let you know the board and the community and staff know that she's probably one of the hardest presidents, hardest working presidents. Let me rephrase that: hardest working presidents I've ever seen. Monday, I met with her for an hour and a half. Tuesday, we met at an ad hoc committee for 3 hours. Yesterday, we met for 2.5 hours. So she's very engaged, and I appreciate that. I really do. I can't keep up with her sometimes, so I really appreciate you taking that time. Patrick will go into our overall financial look for the district a little bit more. As I indicated in my general manager's report, it's looking much better than we originally anticipated. It wasn't too long ago where several people got up to the podium and said, you just might as well cash it in and declare bankruptcy and all that stuff. And at that point, we were looking at about a $500,000 shortfall. As Patrick will discuss briefly in his finance manager's report, we're looking at finishing the fiscal year with about $772,000 thereabouts. That does not include any proceeds from the $4.3 million, or it does not represent any additional revenues in water and wastewater if we are successful with the Proposition 218. As Chief Eric, I call him Chief Eric because I can never pronounce his last name, Chief Eric indicated I keep working with them on El Nino. I'll jump down below. I'm working with all the staff on El Nino. I want to make sure that we're doing everything from an operational standpoint that we can. If you remember, there was some during January of 2011, we had those heavy rains. There was some things that we could have done better as staff. And so I challenged all our department managers and asked them to provide me a written summary of what they're doing in preparation for El Nino. I've received three of the four department managers so far. And so we just want to make sure that our pumps are working, that our generators are working, that we have tanks if they can hold capacity at the wastewater plant or pump down, that we can use them for bypass. I also reached out to Wade Horton, the Public Works Director for the County of San Luis Obispo, and I asked him about that big, huge pump that sits across from the Shell station. You know, has that been checked? Is it operational? And his way of saying yes was just, he sent me a 90-page document on the maintenance of that pump, which is reassuring because we know that that's going to fire up when it needs to be fired up and those kind of things. Governor Brown has declared an emergency for the massive tree die-off and associated the prolonged drought. He continued that. That was an executive order, B-3635. So if you need that information, just let me know. We're starting the budget process early this year. We usually start it about March, gives us April, May, June, and then we bring a rough draft in May, bring a second draft in June. You dropped it in June usually. But I want the department managers, especially water and wastewater, to look at their infrastructure needs and to really price those out so we're really addressing some of the things that need to be done. And we're prioritizing them. And we're getting good, solid prices, and we're not just making estimates on what we think might need to be done. We have an opening on the PROS agenda, a PROS commission. So if anybody's interested in applying for the PROS commission, it was a vacancy when Ben Bolden left the PROS commission. We have that information on our website. We have the information at the office. And we also have put it in the newspaper. One thing that I wanted to clarify is we're asking for public comment on the drainage and grading plans for the East Ranch. Public comment is different than an EIR process. This is a requirement that was stipulated by the county. When we do anything on the ranch, they want to make sure that we solicit community input. And we want to be able to do that. So it's on the website. We're advertising in the newspaper. You get a hold of Carlos Mendoza, our facilities and resources. And it's just a grading and drainage plan. It's not building the park or anything like that. But it's the first step in what we need to do. I need to clarify. I got two things confused. The drought declaration was an extension issued by the governor. And the governor declared an emergency regarding the dead trees. So the drought declaration was extended by the governor. Our offices will be closed Friday or Thursday for Thanksgiving the 26th and Friday the 27th. The fire department has, and you've probably seen it on KSBY, the Season of Hope for food and toys and things like that. If you go up to the fire department, their container is completely full. But I would encourage everybody, when you're out shopping for food or you're shopping for gifts for your relatives or toys, there's some time left to go up and drop that by the fire department. So that's our drop-off point for the Season of Hope. I think I've covered everything on my report, Madam President. The other reports, I won't go over them individually. As you can see, each one of the departments continue to be really busy. And if it's okay with Madam President and the board, I'd like Patrick to just touch on the overall finances of the district right now and provide you some information. It was requested a couple board meetings ago that we give you information on changes in water sales and consumption based on the adjustments to the Stage 3 drought regulations that were in place. And as Patrick indicates in his finance manager's report, we've seen an uptick. But he also, what I appreciate about what he did is he compared it to other years. So if it's okay with Madam President, the board, if Patrick could just go ahead and give his finance manager's report, then I'll be more than happy to answer anything.
Okay, very good. We would love to hear from you.
Madam President, members of the board, I'd like to make two additional comments about the office hours. On the day bills are due, whatever the due date is, we do extend the hours to 5 o'clock because we get a lot of people coming in that day to pay. So we will be open till 5 on the day that invoices are due. And if somebody just can't get to the office between 10 and 3, if they'll call the office, we'll make an appointment and we can greet them at other times. It's just... by not having to answer the phones and stuff, we get a lot more administrative work done, which is very beneficial to us. As General Manager Gruber said, we looked at production. This most recent billing period and consumption went up 13% compared to last year. It went down slightly compared to the prior billing period, but that's the summer, and it's always a lot higher during the summer. So we think there probably was some impact to letting people water once a day during the week. consumption for the last billing period was 56% of the base period in 2013. So that's the lowest we've been is 49%. And so we are seeing consumption go up a little bit. I wanted to talk about the cash flow. We have reduced expenditures, as we've discussed. We've not made any major acquisitions or project commitments, so that we do have a projected cash flow at the end of the fiscal year of a little over $700,000. That's, you know, plus or minus $100,000 or so, because things change fairly dramatically. And it also, it doesn't include receipt of any further grant funds, but it also doesn't include the money we still owe on the EWS project, or that we've committed on the EWS project, which is approaching $1 million. So we still need to be careful how we spend our money so we can make our commitments under EWS. And actually, I guess that was it. That was all I had.
All right. General Manager Gruber, does that conclude our General Manager's report today?
Yes, ma'am. If there's any questions the board would have, it's pretty extensive. And I just wanted to let Director Rice know that I was able to get to your questions and answered them as best as I could.
You,
so
you did. Thank you. Appreciate that.
No, ma'am. There's nothing else at this time.
Okay. Questions for the General Manager then? We have first Director Behringer.
Okay. Yes, some are just comments, and others are questions. I noticed that the California Conservation Corps has committed 2,234 hours. That's 2,000. That's not a typo. 2,234 hours. That's great.
That is correct.
Also, you made a mention earlier that Mr. Gressens attended a meeting this morning. It was later this morning, and Mr. Flores also says that there might be some funding from Prop 84. I don't think you need a whole lot of guidance from the board to try and have a group of projects. There's one that I think is specifically one that would fit, and that would be there's a study that the Army Corps of Engineers still needed to be funded. It was very small, $84,000 or something. So if you could remind Bob about that, putting that in as possible study that could happen. Also, I really appreciated last month or last meeting when Bob Gressens mentioned that we should be calling this the water restoration project, and I think that's really we should start changing EWS to water restoration project as much as possible for a lot of reasons, especially sustainability. Also, if we have commitments on the water restoration project, maybe that can be Prop 84 funded. I mean, that would be great to see that happen. Another comment, that tree that fell on the Bluebird and crushed these four cars, one of them was a Chevy, I believe. The others weren't. Who's responsible for that? Is that a county response? I understand our CCSD actually went there.
Well, the CCSD fire department responded for health or public health and safety reasons. Determined upon arrival that there was nobody in the cars or that there was nobody injured in the facility. They red-tagged the building, evacuated the building because there was the possibility of additional cypress limbs falling from that tree. It's the the business owner's responsibility to remove that tree. As far as the insurance on the cars, I don't know, but when I arrived about an hour after it happened with Chief Eric, the tree company was already there, and they were taking the limbs off the trees and cutting it up and things like that. So, unfortunately, it is the new owner's responsibility. As I stood next to the old owner of the Bluebird, who had sold it a month before, and we're just amazed and thankful that nobody was hurt or injured or killed in that, because if they would have been in those cars, it would have been a much more tragic outcome.
Okay. One other thing, to some people's comfort, the public comment we had, there's an annual financial audit that's coming up, and I'm sure that they go through it quite clearly to see what charges are applied toward the restoration project, water restoration project or not. And I see that we received $36,864 in operating revenue applied to that. What is that compared to the cost? Is the cost similar, or is it only covering part of the cost?
I don't have the exact numbers, but the budget is about a $100,000 deficit. If we get all the revenues we project and we spend all the money we project, it's about a $100,000 this year deficit.
Oh, that's the annual, the annual. Right, and but we just started collecting revenue on the restoration project just recently. So in a full year, do you expect it to be pretty even or?
Not really. I project a deficit to some extent for a couple of years, depending on the chemical costs and the sampling costs.
Okay.
Those will have to come way down before we'll break even.
Okay. And that concludes my questions.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Now we'll move over to this side. Director Sanders.
Sure. Question for the general manager and the finance director. Finance director mentioned that there's been an uptick in water consumption. How close are we getting to the water consumption assumptions that are built into the water rate increase?
This month we were at 59% or this billing period, and it varies from billing period to billing period. The consumption is based on prior consumption. The projection is 70%, mm-hmm. So we're still 10 or 11% below that, but the budget is projected upon not being an emergency water situation anymore where people can use, they're not restricted in their water use. So my belief is it's fairly realistic that we'll be able to get back to the 70%.
Good.
And Director Rice?
Thank you, President Robinette. First of all, thank you for the preparation work that you've done already, General Manager Gruber, in advance of the potentially bad weather we're expecting. I'm really glad to see that that's getting done, and I really very much appreciate you making sure that it's getting done by all of the various departments. I just have a few comments. The first ones are related to fire. I haven't heard anything back about from the ad hoc fire committee. I know it's been a crazy number of meetings we've had recently with the rates and the groundwater management. And I don't know if we have any progress on a longer term solution for a fire chief. And so do we have any kind of general idea of when those items might be considered? Because, I mean, we're about halfway through the contract right now.
Yeah, at the end of the board meeting, there'll be ad hoc reports, and then
Director
Thompson will be able to provide the board where we are in that process and where we still need to go and still things that need to take place, and he'll be able to provide a timeline regarding
awesome.
That.
Awesome. I just didn't know because it just says ad hoc, so I wasn't sure if that was going to be. Thank you. Thank you also for clarifying on the day that the bills are due, the extra time, and that people could call if they need to make an appointment if they need out of hours. Hopefully we won't have too much of that. I'm guessing we won't. But I know with the increase, sometimes the very last day is the only day that the money actually is in the person's bank account. And so it's good that they have that last minute. Of course, we'd like to get it on time sooner, but I'm glad that you're accommodating that concern. It'd be nice to have something less vague on the EIR schedule maybe next month. Less vague than just January, and like just a schedule of things, because it's not just the draft gets released and then there's public comments and that, just kind of the whole overarching part, because I know we need that in order to complete our permit with the county. So I'd just kind of like to see a big picture kind of.
Okay.
Didn't SR4 break down recently? Didn't we just replace that whole thing like less than 3 years ago?
Yes, ma'am. And when I answered the email, and I said it right before I got here, so you probably
okay.
didn't get a chance.
I'm sorry, I haven't read it yet.
No, so let me just, if I could,
You can also report back next month. It's not an urgent thing. It just seems like asset management. I'd like to try and make sure that if it was something that was still under warranty or we weren't doing maintenance or whatever.
I have an answer here. The original improvements to the SR4 well were related to automation, monitoring capabilities, fail-safe devices, telemetry, and replacement of the filter media. So that's what we did when we had that catastrophic failure. We went in there and just pretty much automated everything, put fail-safe devices in, put monitoring equipment, added telemetry, replaced the filter media that had never been replaced. The most recent repairs were for the pump itself that has never been replaced since put into operation. So it's a submergible pump, so the pump burned up. So the SR4 pump burned up, and we put that into service, how many years ago, Tim? Quite a few. So that's what failed, and that's what has been replaced. Yeah, 2002, as Director Sanders indicated. Now, on the Santa Rosa side, you have SR1 and SR3. All the improvements have been made to those. When we put the Filtronics system back online, we did essentially the same thing with the SR1 and SR3. So everything is new over there. Going back to the San Simeon wells, if you look at the San Simeon wells up there, those are going to need to be pulled and replaced at some point in time. They're submersibles, and that would be one of the things that we would incorporate into our strategic plan or to our capital improvement program. Mm-hmm. So the SR4, SR1, SR3, the Filtronics plant, and the SR4 have been completely rebuilt. The San Simeon wells will eventually need to be pulled and serviced and replaced. And when we do that, we'll incorporate some things. I won't go into acronyms. But we'll incorporate things that'll make them work better.
And I just want to make the reason I ask is I just want to make sure, especially when we're replacing these high cost items, that we are tracking when we're going to have to replace them again, because obviously it's going to wear out again, and hopefully the maintenance is being done so we don't get catastrophic failures like we did a couple of years ago. Okay, thank you for clarifying that. I think that is, let me just look. Oh, this is the last thing, and it's a very small thing. But the in the facilities and resources report, that it talks about a charter contractor was hired to remove some trees. That was at Charter's expense or not the district's expense, right? I hope. Okay, that's fine.
We'll have to get some information on that.
Whenever we don't have to spend the money, it'd be nice.
I could ask Patrick, because he would know if we paid a charter invoice, have we?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah,
okay.
So.
All right.
I'll check.
I do appreciate the thoroughness of the operations report. It really does help me kind of get a handle on what's going on with the district. Thank you very much.
And Vice President Thompson?
Thank you, Madam President. Two things. Firstly, I noticed in the production report that the advanced water supply project produced 9 acre feet of water in October. And is my assumption correct that because it produced that water, it enabled us to sustain a relatively strong level of water in our well fields? Is that
That's correct. If you prior to us starting the EWS this time, there was a lot of good dialogue back and forth between myself and the board and the community about what's going to be that trigger mechanism. You know, are you just going to arbitrarily start this thing because you feel like it? And if you remember correctly, we started this thing based on some criteria that the water supervisor, myself, and the district engineer put together. When we started it, the hydraulic mound was at zero, very, very close to zero. And the wells in the San Simeon Creek Basin were between 10 and 12 feet and dropping rapidly. You have to understand that once the WBE well at Windsor Bridge East reaches 3 feet, we cannot use the Santa Rosa aquifer. So what we saw when we started turning, when we turned the EWS on within a relatively short period of time, is that the gradient went positive, and then we started to see the San Simeon wells rebound and favorably. So the system is doing exactly what we want it to do from a sustainability standpoint. So the answer to that is yes.
And especially since we are pumping 60% of our water out of San Simeon, I think it's very encouraging that the well levels are staying constant.
Correct. And what the advanced water, sustainable water treatment plant allows us to do is really manage both of our basins, not only provide an additional reliable water source for the community, but we're not always living on the edge. And I think for years we've lived on the edge. And, you know, well, can we get a petition to let the WBE well go below 3 feet? Well, can we go zero gradient and increase sampling and hope that nothing happens? Can we? And that's not a way to run a community's water supply. That's going to be a cultural transition for this community. They're going to have to start to appreciate and understand that although we did run our water supply system a certain way, it wasn't under favorable conditions for the environment. And so now what we have is the opportunity to take a gradient that was going negative, return it back to positive numbers, take a well field that was going and dropping down, replenish it, bring it back to positive numbers. While doing this, taking water and incorporated it into the San Simeon Creek and improving the water quality of the creek and the lagoon. So it's a really good project, and to answer your question, the answer is yes.
And thank you for that response. I think it's good for the community to understand that. I think it's good information. One other point, and that was with respect to the pumps in the West Village. Mel McCulloch had inquired of County Public Works about the procedure and the timing for starting the pumps to prevent flooding on Main Street, particularly at the Shell station and stores to the south. And he got a response from the county about how they will monitor that and how they will turn it on. And there are some phone numbers to contact. Perhaps if you could include this maybe on the website or in a mailing, or at least notify your staff that if they do observe any flooding, who to call and who to contact in the county. And so I'll give this to you later on.
Thank you. I did reach out to Wade Horton, the Public Works Director. But I also think it's important that that myself and Chief Eric and our staff, whether it's with him or one of his deputies, but that we meet and we have a meeting. But also, I was even thinking possibly even a community meeting with everybody and just kind of say, okay, where are we? What are the responses that we're going to do? And take a proactive approach. And what are everybody's roles? Because the county plays a huge role in this, and I think they understand it, not just specifically from that pump, but the clearing of roads and the trees. You know, we don't have them stationed at the rodeo grounds anymore. They're no longer there. And so just want to make sure that the North County is, our concerns are being addressed and that we don't run into a situation where the West Village floods out again.
Thank you. I would like to comment now, too. And I particularly appreciated your elaboration and explanation on where we are with the, what I kind of think by now we have created is a sustainable water treatment plant. And I think that's quite a compliment to everyone in this community and certainly to you and your staff that we have accomplished. Because what you're starting to have now, we started last year with optimism and believing, but we had no real data yet. We had beliefs that we would be able to change gradients, begin to work both aquifers back and forth to balance them, to refresh them. But see, now you actually have empirical data. And so we are now no longer hypothesizing. We actually have data. And I do think that that is really a very important point. In this first actual hands-on year now, we are really finding that what we believed would be multifaceted in the benefits to this community truly is beginning to be substantiated. So I commend you and the whole team for all the work you've been doing in this direction. Because it's taken a lot of focus, and yet here we are beginning to actually have reflections rather than predictions. So thank you for that.
And Madam President, it has been a year, and tomorrow I'll be at the Regional Water Quality Control Board for a one-year review of the project, and I've made some talking points. I talked to John Rocky today. Just one other comment really quickly, and I made a note regarding this, and I've said this publicly many times, regarding where are we with the cost to run that facility. When we incorporated our structure to an operating cost associated with the facility, it was information provided by CDM, and we incorporated those into the rate portion of that, the operational rate portion. But since we needed to build this facility so quick and it was under pretty tight timeline, it was prior to us receiving those Title 22 and Title 27 reports, permits from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And those permits are very, very onerous. They require a lot of testing and monitoring. Regional Water Quality Control Board has already reduced some of those sampling requirements. And once we provide them that empirical data, they'll continue to do that. State Water Resources Control Board, the drinking water side of things, once we run that facility for an entire year, we can take all that data and go to them and say, okay, now, you know, we have proof, and they'll lighten the reins on some of the costs associated with that. So I don't want anybody, people are entitled to say what they want to say, but I don't want people to say, hey, I told you so, this thing's costing much more to operate than we originally anticipated. That's a true statement, but when we implemented our rates based on what we thought it would cost to run, that was prior to the regulatory agency saying, this is what we're going to require you to do to run this thing. We need to have a comfort zone that everything is safe for the public. And I can appreciate that, and I can understand that. But what you're going to see is you're going to see those costs go down because the sampling and the monitoring will continue to go down. And hopefully, as Patrick indicated, that they'll come more in line with each other.
Thank you. Vice President Thompson?
Yes, and just one more thing. I think that if we can find those before and after pictures of the lagoon, I saw the after pictures, and the impact of this water going into the lagoon was just incredible. And I know that there's some before pictures, and I think that would be very helpful for the Water Board to observe also.
I agree with that, too. That is such a benefit and an obvious one. We do have some great pictures now with the plant running and how healthy the lagoon looks at this time. And so if anyone out there, anywhere, I don't know where those pictures went, but some people did have some really good shots of when we had the algae bloom. We might check with Mary Webb or Tina Dickinson. I know they were helpful in that way. And so we need to locate them and see the comparison of when the plant was not running, how very stressed that lagoon was, and how great it looks today. When we had the meeting with State Parks, the acting director here, and we took her to the plant, it was just phenomenal to see the lagoon. If you think of lagoons up and down the state of California, we probably got the most refreshed, healthy-looking lagoon in the state at this time. And again, it has to do with what we're doing with our sustainable water project. Okay. Yes, Director Rice.
On that same subject, specifically the biomonitoring and the adaptive management plan that was a part of the appendix of the groundwater management plan, and I think it was also included in when we got the draft of the negative declaration the year before. So in there, it talks about they do monitoring at certain intervals, but the reporting is only
well, it's supposed to be adaptive, and I certainly want to make sure that if we're doing anything negative, like looks can be deceiving. People could look really great, but they're doing horrible. So the lagoon looks great, and we know it's doing better than when it had the algae bloom for sure. But I want to make sure it's not too fresh for the species that like to be there. I mean, is 100 gallons too much or too little? And without the biological monitoring reporting being more regular than annual, I'm hoping that staff gets feedback on a regular basis. So if there's something that starts being degraded in the area, that we can address it, because this was a project that was done on a really tight timeline, and the EIR is coming after instead of before. So I want to make sure that what we're doing is anything that could possibly create an impact, we're actually able to address it sooner rather than later. I would hate for a year to go by and then we find out that we've committed a tank or something horrible like that. And I'm assuming that the Fish and Wildlife is helping out with some of that. Do we have a biological monitoring other than the one that we want to put in the state parks?
Yeah, that's a good question, and we were not mandated to do an AMP. We went ahead and did that again as an additional precautionary measure. And as I answered your when I addressed some of your questions, you know, we're working with state parks right now on a right of entry, and there's the pedestrian bridge there, and we want to put advanced monitoring equipment on that bridge that would provide not only the CCSD but other regulatory agencies the ability to retrieve that data, but also to at any time real live feed be able to dial into it and see what that creek underflow of the bridge looks like. So we're working with state parks right now on a right of entry permit that would allow us to put that monitoring equipment. Dean's been really instrumental in helping us with that. We've met with state parks out there, and it's for the what they call the monitoring station. That's really not, but the instrumentation, we've already purchased it. Access to state parks land there. You know, we want to be able to access not just the area that our AMP identifies, but to be able to go farther down without upsetting state parks. We want their blessing. We want to be able to enter their property with them saying it's okay, and also be able to enter state parks property so we can expand the adaptive management plan and expand the monitoring of that area.
It didn't quite answer the question if we have other biological monitoring spots other than on that, is that the primary one we're in?
Yes, well, we have biological monitoring spots that are identified within our adaptive management plan.
Okay. That helps. Thank you. I just want to make sure that since this is data that we can also be using in the EIR to show that the mitigations we already have in place are doing what we predicted they would be doing.
It's ongoing and continuous. So,
okay. I very much appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further comments from the board or general manager? I think that was a very comprehensive report. Appreciate that. Next, we're going to move to ad hoc committee reports. And we do have a request for public comment. Would you like to share your public comment before we begin? Okay. Jerry Wood.
I'm Jerry Wood, Cambria resident. Good afternoon, President Robinette and board members. Before I go into what I'm saying, as a citizen of Cambria, having worked closely with Captain Torlano and Engineer Hamilton, the choices of those two positions were exceptional. Both of those people are highly qualified and very professional firefighters. And from our side, we appreciate it. And I had to tell Emily if she went on a fire call, she had to go do the captain stuff, not stay by the engine and pump water, because that wasn't her job anymore. So, and she took it, after she hit me in the shoulder, she took it nice. basically, I would like to advise the Ad Hoc Committee on Fire Protection that we are continuing in our efforts to expand our collection of signatures on petitions. We are being very successful at that, and we continue to grow numbers. And like I said in the last meeting, I will provide those petitions at a later date, or maybe at the Ad Hoc Committee meeting, so we're up to date. And we're also looking forward to the completion of the Ad Hoc Committee's review of the issue and being able to respond at any future Ad Hoc Committee meetings. And in closing, I wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving season. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we are going to move now into Ad Hoc Committee reports and other related board member reports. So who would like to, don't all jump out at once. It's the first time I've not seen any green lights on. Director Rice?
I attended the North Coast Advisory Council meeting last night because Director Berenger had a calendar conflict. And I had a conflict also, so I wasn't able to stay very long. So my report basically is I went and let them know what we were going to be talking about at this meeting and gave them an update on the rates that we passed to put into the 218 process and answered a couple of questions. There weren't many, but they were mostly on the rates. I regret to say I was not able to stay for the rest of the meeting, so the issues that they discussed, I'm sorry, I don't have a report.
That's fine. Thank you. And Vice President Thompson, are you going to, you're going to give the
Yes, I have report. A couple meetings to report on. So I did attend the Parks Recreation Open Space meeting. General Manager Gruber reported on the search for a replacement commissioner. The applications are due on December 20th, Monday, December 20th. So they can be obtained at the website or at the office. And I encourage anyone who's interested in parks, open space, and what have you to apply. It's a good commission. Both myself and President Robinette served on it at one point in time, and
for a long time.
For a long time, yes. So we're looking forward to some good candidates on that. I attended the chamber board meeting, not as part of the CCSD board, but I just wanted to advise that the tree auction, which benefits many of the nonprofits in this town, is going to be held on Tuesday, December 1st in this building, and tickets are available at the chamber. Again, it's really a wonderful event, so I encourage everyone to attend. And then following that, on Thursday, December 3rd, is Hospitality Night, and that's also a very fun kickoff to the holiday season. Then now, with respect to the Ad Hoc Fire Committee, the committee met with representatives from CAL FIRE yesterday. And had a very productive meeting and discussion with them. We've asked them to provide financial information. We've also requested that of Patrick for our fire department here. I expect to have another meeting with them and then several other meetings before we conclude our discussions and come forward with a recommendation. And that should take place hopefully within the next 6 weeks, thereabouts.
Okay, thank you. And I am happy to join you in that committee. And you've covered a lot of good, I think, information before yesterday, too. But it was just very much a productive session.
President Robinette, I have a question on that report.
Yes.
For the applications for people who would like to be on PROS, is there any specific qualifications that are required, or is it one of those you have to live in Cambria and be over 18 positions?
Well, that's,
and hopefully interested in parks, yeah, recreation,
that's
open
part
space,
of, it,
of
and,
course. I just want to make sure that anybody who's interested doesn't think that they're somehow not
right.
qualified if they want to be participating.
Basic qualifications are living in Cambria, Beyond that, the application suggests that for more than a decade, the Proposed Commission has served in an advisory role to the CCSD board and has worked closely with CCSD staff to plan and develop parks, recreation, and open space projects for Cambria. If you're interested in playing an active role in this important aspect of Cambria's future, we encourage you to apply. So just basically a general interest in parks, open space. One of the important projects going on right now is moving forward with the community park in the East Ranch area by the rodeo grounds. And so once the grading and other aspects of the preliminary plans for the park have been concluded, then I think the dog park is the next scheduled move. And then obviously there will be some recreation fields and passive recreation areas. And it's a long process, but the people that are on PROS right now are very committed to moving forward with this.
And the term, if somebody was to
It would be for the remainder of Mr. Bolden's term, and that would be October 23rd, 2018.
Okay. Thank you very much for that additional information. Yes.
Okay, and then I would report just briefly on the Fire Focus meeting, which meets twice a month, and it's still very, very active. It's interesting. Certainly we have started with lots of coordination, a lot of different agencies represented, and it's been very useful. We started, of course, with the concern for fire being in, of course, our forest, and we continue with that, but it's very interesting how the conversation has branched out now, because it's really become more of a committee that's talking about emergencies and more than just the possibility of a fire. So the other day when I was there, a large part of the conversation started moving toward the obvious. What about the possibility of the El Nino? What about flood? Those types of things. And then I had noticed we're starting to get some requests from some people that why aren't we, meaning I think they meant the CSD, why aren't we getting the creeks in better shape with all the overgrowth that there's, you know, there's really, that's problematic at times when we have a flood and we have all the water in the creeks and then brush starts to begin to bunch up and actually block the creek. And so I brought that up at the meeting, and it's an interesting one jurisdictionally, actually. It was an interesting group and conversation. I just brought it up for conversation to see what would what we thought. There are people that think that the creeks need to be trimmed way back because there's big overhang now. There are others absolutely staunchly say, you can't touch that. That's meant to be there. It's nature's way of doing whatever. And so there's kind of interesting pros and cons to whatever happens. But it becomes a question of jurisdiction, too, who actually has this. There are some people very much environmentally committed people, as I am, and had pointed out that you can't just go kind of wild with a chainsaw in there and cut it all back because it has a lot to do with fish and having shade and protecting fish. And so what started out almost to be a sort of obvious, easier conversation got to be very complicated. And so I noticed people, if you happen to be on Park Hill and you go across the bridge or anywhere, you can see our creeks. They really are overgrown, for sure, over the last few years. But no conclusions on it yet, but it's an interesting one. And so that concludes our reports. And unless you had one more, Director
yeah,
Rice?
I just wanted to comment on your, thank you for the report from the Fire Safe Focus. I appreciate that. I think that there is a very complex thing going on here. We're trying, between the recharge project, the wastewater treatment plant, getting that in line, and trying to manage our dying forest. It is a complex thing that we're trying to get, not just sustainable, in my opinion, but to a balance that works with the folks that are here and the environment that's here. Really, if you were going to let everything be natural, this forest needs a fire to be healthy. It's kind of part of the cycle, life cycle of a pine forest. Because there's people living here, obviously, that's not something that can happen. But we have to keep all these things in mind. That's one of the reasons why there's overgrowth. There hasn't been a fire in so long. So it's there's a complex balance that I think it's important. We're having these discussions in all of the different realms that we're responsible for.
Thank you. You're right. It is. The more you talk about it, the more obvious and complicated it becomes. Yeah. Director Barringer?
Yeah. President Rahnemeth, it brings to mind the local hazard mitigation plan that we're needing to do, and I'd like to see a focus on that. And I know you're keeping a timeline on the regular coastal development permit. I wonder if we could have someone put together a timeline on this local hazard mitigation program. It's something that covers all different kinds of things other than just fire. And so, and I think the focus group has brought that up to us, but I think it's our responsibility to do so. So my recommendation, I guess, is to the general manager that he put a timeline perhaps in place for our next meeting or something so that it gets some kind of focus.
Yes, and I think you have had multiple conversations with Chief Lewin, correct?
Yes, he is seeking a $30,000 grant from the county, and but what I can, Director Barringer, what I can have Eric do next time, or I can shoot, I'll reach out to him in the next week or so and just ask for a status update on that.
Mm-hmm. And the $30,000 is for the writing, correct?
Yes. What we would do is we would have a consultant do it for us, so which is probably a good idea because but working with the community, obviously, not just handing it off to somebody where they were, to make sure there's a lot of interaction between the different agencies and different groups and different staff members and things like that to formulate something like that. But I'll follow up on that.
Right.
It's important. It's an important plan for the community to have. I absolutely agree.
And the hope is that he can pay for that service, the consultant.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Moving then. No further business under the manager's report, the ad hoc committees. The consent agenda, we're ready to go on that. There was nothing to be pulled.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
Second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda. No discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Sounds unanimous to me today on that. Okay, 5-0. And then we have no hearings and appeals, which brings us to regular business under A now. We'll have a request for public comment, but I'm going to have General Manager Gruber first introduce the item.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 9A is discussion and consideration regarding adoption of policy of applying for grants. If you remember, the board several months ago asked us to bring a discussion or a policy relating to grants forward. This was stemmed from the SAFER grant, and so we brought something forward, brought a policy forward together for you. And the board asked that some minor alterations and tweaks be made to it to really home in on the policy and to really clarify some additional points a little more. Worked with district council on this, and with that, I'll let Tim add some comments to it if he wants to.
Thank you, General Manager Gruber. If you'll remember, at your October 22nd meeting, you considered this policy, and you requested that we make some modifications. I believe they were related to financial impacts associated with grants, recurring costs, matching funds. And the changes you requested were that those type of grant applications be vetted first before a subcommittee that's appropriate to the subject matter, and that then the subcommittee's recommendation or observations be forwarded to the board, and that the board actually approve moving forward with those grant applications. So those changes have been made to the policy before you. I would be glad to read the provisions that we've included, but they're fairly short and self-evident. And so it's before you again for reconsideration and to adopt. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. We have a request for public comment. Pass? Okay. So we can move into board discussion, moving toward a motion.
President Robinette.
Director Behringer.
Yeah, I just want to share my my thoughts on this, and I think that it is an interesting policy, but I tend to think it's a little bit too restrictive in a way. I think, and it's the last paragraph, it says, under this policy, the general manager has sole responsibility for applying for external funding projects and programs. I like the idea of the general manager being informed of them. I think we can have a subcommittee. I like the idea of a subcommittee, but the finance committee is a standing committee that probably could vet, you know, on any subject grants. And the reason I'm saying this, I think that there's so many opportunities for grant funding that for the general manager to be knowledgeable about it and to have the finance manager review the potential impacts, I'd like to see as many grants being written as possible. We have a lot of opportunities. So it's more of a comment than it just sounds like he's the only guy. And I'd like to see it more. I didn't even come up with the right words, but the general manager is the sole focal point or must be notified of potential grants. But for a department head to start writing a grant that's been vetted, all the power to him, let him do it. I know we might have had a problem with the SAFER grant, but I think that's an anomaly. So that's just part of the discussion.
I know what you're saying. You want clarification. What we're saying is that beyond the general manager, no one should be out on behalf of the district somewhat preparing a grant, submitting it, that it must, if you see a grant opportunity and it looks like a really beneficial one to the district, you're in, working in some department, you're off to some professional meeting, or you've picked it up somewhere like that, I think then what we're trying to say here is before you kind of independently move forward, you need to sit down with your department manager, who will sit down with the general manager to see if the general manager, in fact, says, yeah, let's get a green light moving on that and get started. Isn't that what we're looking for?
I agree. I'm just voicing my opinion.
Madam President, it does say the general manager or his designee. If you look under policy, second paragraph. So, I mean, it's a management issue. The general manager obviously needs to be aware, the board needs to be aware of grant applications that are made. But consistent, I think, with good management practices, the general manager needs to be in the lead, and he can designate personnel within the organization who can actually write the grant, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
I think it seems like we're all trying to say essentially the same thing. Are we feeling that we need different wording on it, or are we okay?
Well, I think the general manager is probably getting the gist of how to implement the policy.
On the other hand, when a grant is being written, a lot of the responsibility and work winds up being on the general manager, and I don't want that to be a point where the general manager says, no, I don't have time, or we don't have time for this grant. I like it that it's vetted for other issues, but if there's only one person, you know, that can stop or doesn't feel that they have the time or bandwidth or staff to be able to go forward with a grant, I'd like any refusal to do a grant be brought to the board, and maybe we provide more staff or more effort, because the grants are out there. There's a lot that we don't take advantage of.
Perhaps one solution, if you don't mind, President Robinette, perhaps one solution would be to set a trigger threshold, because some grants, like if they're under the purchasing policy, $10,000 or whatever, probably don't nearly have the list of pages of requirements that the grant for the recharge project that we just put in, the advanced water treatment, and that maybe some sort of trigger. I mean, you don't want to make it complicated with multiple processes, and the general manager definitely needs to have review, but I think that also for the same reason that you were just stating, we don't want to, because we're understaffed, not be able to apply for a grant for staffing, you know, for one example. And so those that above a certain amount of money coming in or requirements from the district, I mean, I perhaps was given that binder of all of the information that we had to provide to the county over the big grant that we just got. But it would probably not be a bad idea on smaller grants, because I know we do for facilities and resources, and sometimes in the parks we get smaller grants, that those are not as critical to be brought to the board. But since the board is a fiduciary responsibility to cover the things that we're trying to get done with this district, it seems to me that I would like to at least see that at a certain either dollar amount or a certain, I don't know what the trigger would be on it, but it would be nice to have where the board can then see. I don't think we need to do all of the analysis of how much is it going to cost to administer this grant on a grant under 10 grand. That seems like a lot of extra work that's not even almost worth, I mean, because of our personnel are busy doing lots of things. You know, there may not be time for them to go through those steps when there is hardly any requirements on the district's behalf. So maybe that's one of the solutions, is something like that. I definitely think they do need to be at least reviewed and signed by the general manager, even if he's not doing the majority of the work. I definitely think that that's an important, especially when there's matching funds that are required.
Well, just to make it go even longer, I take away my entire objection, except if we just struck the word "sole." The general manager has the responsibility for applying. I'm happy, and I move.
If I could speak on this too, I think what we're trying to do, having actually had professional experience working as coordinator of state and federal funding and grants in a very large school district, what we're after here is keeping this simple and manageable. What we're wanting to do is encourage departments, employees in the departments that may see a grant opportunity that certainly the general manager wouldn't even be reading in that professional magazine or that professional newsletter, but to have a process so that we do have a process, that if it's something initiated at the department level, someone sees it that works in the department, they go to their department head, they say, this looks like a great grant, this is kind of tailor-made for us, and that there's a process that people know. The department head then comes to the general manager, who uses his discretion, and says, this does look great, you know, who's going to be writing this, how are we going to, you know, who's going to be taking care of this? But when it comes to bringing it to the board is when it becomes clear that it has a requirement on the part of the district to have some kind of responsible oversight, and where actually the district becomes committed to certain requirements within a grant. We want to take a look at it too, but still based on the general manager's recommendation. It should really never get started without the general manager's approval. The general manager will never have time to write these things. But someone's excited about it in some department, so we're just trying to have it so that it's consistent from one employee to the other.
And having been responsible for $400 million in grants, I too have a few things to say. Mm-hmm. One is that basically I think as a general policy, I think it's fine. I think what's important is that mm-hmm. it lays out responsibility, and every grant has different requirements. Some will require a resolution from this governing body. Others will not, and I think it's up to the general manager to determine what those responsibilities are and to handle it accordingly. And I also think it's a good idea to have you know, a whether it's a report on occasion of pending grants and what's out there, so that we know that that we're following through on opportunities to receive grant funds. And I think it's definitely a very good opportunity for us to do some things we could not otherwise do. And so I would certainly encourage that we seek as much as we can in grant funding.
I do, too. I think we're just wanting to clarify. We're wanting to encourage everyone in the district to, you know, notice and understand what the process is so that we do have an open door and we're ready to go. Are we wanting to remove the word soul? It's not S-O-U-L, is it?
I looked at this letter that's going out to interested parties, and I think I found a typo almost. In the second paragraph, last sentence says that clarify the responsibility and authority for applying for grants and provide that all grants awarded to the CCSD have been thoroughly researched and financially feasible for the district and do not create an unseen financial or other burdens. If you don't put unseen in there, that would automatically keep any financial or other burdens being a block to consideration. So that's the only change I would suggest. If you want somebody else wants to remove soul, it's up to them.
But soul could stay.
I move adoption of the policy with the amendment proposed by Director Beringer.
Did we get the amendment?
I'll second it. It's just the unseen financial.
Insertion of the word unseen between create and financial in the last line of the second paragraph.
I'll second that.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Any further comments, discussion?
Yes, please.
Director Wright?
Thank you, President Robinette. So here's the thing. There's a lot of people in this town that write grants, that know about grants. We have several of them sitting right here on the dais. So when somebody comes across one, whether they're searching for it or it falls in their lap, whether they're staff or community or board, what happens is they should go to General Manager Gruber with that opportunity, who would then pass it out to whichever department it would be most appropriate to address it. Mm-hmm. No.
I don't.
I'm just trying to see because there are a lot of places where you can find out about grants. I just want to know that.
I think it's interesting that you added community, which is great. What a wonderful resource. I totally agree. If it's community, you would have you wouldn't have anywhere to go except to the general manager.
Right.
Although, if you saw something that was really good for wastewater, you could start with that manager. But my
this says that goes to the general manager.
No, I think you need to go. You know, if you're working in a department that has a department manager, a department head, then you would take it first to them. It's just chain of command. I mean, in a school site, if you were a teacher that went to a conference and saw this, you would come back and talk with the principal. And the principal would say, well, let me talk to the area administrator. And then they would ultimately get some kind of nod from the superintendent, and then they would start the work of how's it going to get written. But I think that you shouldn't walk around your department head either, or manager.
We're talking about folks within the community that might come across grant opportunities. That's more what I was addressing.
Right. So, but this was to clarify that, because it's not always the case.
I just wanted to clarify that if a community member saw a grant,
they should come.
Opportunity that they should bring it to the general manager.
They could bring it to one of us, and we would go with them, or they could bring it to the general manager.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you. That's what I was.
Yes.
Clarifying.
Yeah. We welcome anyone who has noticed that there's a really beneficial grant that applies to the CSD to share it with us.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are we good? Okay. Let's take a roll call.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Beringer?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion passes 5-0. And thank you for that clarification on the community. Okay. Oh, I think it's good. I think the fact that we brought up the whole topic and got it brought to the agenda, had the discussion, really highlights that we welcome everyone that has information on a good grant. Okay, so that completes item 9, and we have no further public comment. We are now into future agenda items. We have no request for public comment on that. So we're into discussion now on anything we would like to talk to, maybe have being brought back for discussion, or where we want to go. Anyone? Director Rice?
Just some following up on some items we've talked about before, and they may already be on the calendar for, I don't know how big the December meeting is or anything, but they're also not imminent, except for the first one. We need to have a discussion about revising the restrictions on water, because we have to come between these, the state proclamation of 25% reduction and what people are doing right now. With the new rate coming in, if there's no majority protest on the 218, which I don't think there will be, but I think it's really important for staff that discussion, because it's a critical policy issue about how do we address this fact that we now have a much, much more reliable water source, that we do not have to worry as much about doing damage to the environment or causing subsidence or seawater intrusion, that we're doing a better job of balancing all of our sources, and we now have a new way to make sure that we do have reliable water. So I think it's important that we have a discussion about revising the restrictions, even if it's just going to a reduction in the amount rather than the 50 gallons per person per day or whatever. I'd like to have that discussion, especially considering that we're looking at rates with that 70% as Vice President Thompson or Director Sanders who asked that question about the amount of water that's being used. We also had a reserve policy at one point. It got pushed off. I didn't know if the ad hoc budget committee is still looking at that. And we were going to hear back, hopefully, from Mission Country whether or not about the franchise agreement, as Director Sanders had brought up when we talked about that. So those are kind of three follow-up items that I'd at least like to have you consider. I don't think I need to make a motion, because if it's important enough, I think the President knows how to put it on the agenda if we've got the time for it.
Thank you.
Madam President?
Yes, Director Behringer?
Might I suggest that if you determine that an open discussion about restrictions, that we do it on the December 29th meeting after the public hearing, so that we can, rather than at our next regular meeting, because it makes more sense, it's more coherent. Just a thought.
And perhaps the Conservation Committee would get together and have discussions if that were going to be something that would end up on the agenda, so that there were at least some recommendations from the Conservation Committee.
I think those are good suggestions on timing and when we schedule things, too. Okay, so we'll keep that in mind. Okay. Any other suggestions for the agenda? What? No, it's not even 2:30. Come on.
Let's just sit here.
No, actually, everybody has done a fantastic job, and please enjoy the holiday. The Thanksgiving time is our best time to stop and reflect. We have always much to be thankful for. So thank you all for attending today, too. Meeting is adjourned.
Happy Easter. Oh, thanks.